Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. As I'm sure you've already noticed, eyes are on Iowa today nationally and have been for this week as the most restrictive state bill on abortion awaits on Governor Reynolds' desk to be signed into law. We'll hear from the director of the Drake University Center for Constitutional Law to understand the ramifications, and we'll also hear from two opposing organizations, one planning to fight the law and one planning to defend it. We usually start with Dennis Hart's roundup of local news, but due to our guests' schedules today, you'll hear from Dennis later in the hour. Stick with us, lots to come. Susan Guiasta will also be here with the monthly Ames Municipal Report. So let's get right into it. Last Tuesday, the House of Representatives of Iowa approved a measure banning nearly all abortions in Iowa that requires doctors to conduct abdominal ultrasounds to test for a fetal heartbeat on women seeking abortions and which bans most abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected. The Senate approved the bill on Wednesday morning. Some concessions were made on a more restrictive version when exceptions were added. Exceptions allowed include if the mother was raped and reports the rape to a law enforcement agency or public or private health agency or a family physician within 45 days, or if the mother was a victim of incest and reports the issue to a law enforcement agency, a public or private health agency or family physicians within 140 days, and following a spontaneous miscarriage. Not all the products of conception are expelled. And if a physician certifies that the fetus has abnormality, that in the physician's, quote, reasonable medical judgment is incompatible with life. No Democrats voted for the bill. According to the Des Moines Register, Democrats argued against the bill for about 9 hours, saying the new exemptions do little to moderate the measure, which they called frightening, unconstitutional, and extreme. Six Republican members of the House voted against the bill, including Chip Baltimore of Boone. It has been said that Iowa Republicans hope that if Governor Reynolds signs the fetal heartbeat law, as it is called, the inevitable legal challenge to the law will ultimately lead to the opportunity to possibly overturn Roe versus Wade in the U.S. Supreme Court. I asked Mark Kende, director of Drake University's Constitutional Law Center, to explain how this would happen. He started out by pointing out that this bill is in conflict with Roe versus Wade's Supreme Court decision, which affirms the legality of a woman's right to have an abortion under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution.
It's probably an inconsistent law in terms of being inconsistent with Roe versus Wade. Roe versus Wade says women have the right to an abortion up to viability. Even many years later, viability is probably about 20 weeks at the earliest, and it seems like it's pretty much a no-go under Roe versus Wade. So the long-term plan, it seems, is that these folks want to try to use this to challenge Roe versus Wade. It will be challenged in court right away, and it'll have other groups coming in to defend it besides the state. They really kind of have to have a long-term strategy to try to have Iowa become the state that successfully overturns Roe versus Wade. Otherwise, it just really doesn't make sense.
Explain the path that it would take to actually accomplishing that.
It could take one of two paths. It could go through the state court system up to the Iowa Supreme Court, and Roe versus Wade could be one of the grounds of the decision, and then the U.S. Supreme Court can take cases from top state courts if there's a federal law issue. That's one possibility.
How do these things actually happen?
There'd have to be a client, some woman thinking of having an abortion and is in this period after 6 weeks, let's say. The law would have an impact, basically making it illegal. So that client's lawyers would bring a lawsuit, either a state trial court or a federal trial court, and the first thing they would do would be seek an injunction, stopping the law from going into effect. The injunction would probably be successful because, as I said, the law is inconsistent with Roe versus Wade, and they would probably then face an appeal by a pro-life organization or a group or the state. Presumably the state would defend its law. And on appeal, it would seem like the state would consistently lose all the way up until the Iowa Supreme Court, where they would also lose if the issue is Roe versus Wade, because, again, the law is inconsistent with Roe versus Wade. So it would be the state that would try to ask the U.S. Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, to hear the case. Or if it went through the federal court system and the state lost in what's called the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, then the state would appeal and ask the U.S. Supreme Court to take the case. I mean, it would be a big victory for the pro-life side if they get the U.S. Supreme Court to take the case.
In a sense, losing is winning here on a local level because it moves it along towards Roe versus Wade, right?
Well, yes. The U.S. Supreme Court could say, no, we don't want to take it, and we're going to just let the lower court rulings say the law is invalid. The U.S. Supreme Court has had similar opportunities to take cases involving other kinds of abortion restrictions and has usually said no, with a few exceptions. So it would be a big victory for the pro-life side if the U.S. Supreme Court decided to hear the case. They only hear about 80 cases a year. And they get asked to hear hundreds, if sometimes thousands, of cases. So one of the cases the court decides to hear would be a great victory. That would give them the opportunity to try and argue to overturn Roe versus Wade to the court which decided it. And that's where they would have to have it overturned. But you can bet the pro-choice side will have very good lawyers opposing them, and it would be a major battle at the U.S. Supreme Court.
If the U.S. Supreme Court took it at all, it would already be an indication on some level that Roe versus Wade was being put into question.
Oh, yes, but it only takes four of the justices to agree to hear the case. It takes five to win the case. So they might even be able to get, potentially, four justices willing to hear the case. But right now, based on the current Supreme Court's composition, it doesn't look like they have five justices to be able to win on the issue. So it could be very bittersweet.
The Iowa Attorney General's office has said that they're reviewing the bill's constitutionality. What if he declines to defend the bill?
That's complicated. Usually the state will defend legislation even if it has some questions about the legislation. Or they could say the questions are so serious and it's so obviously unconstitutional that we're not going to. If they decide to defend it, it's kind of like a more normal traditional case where the attorney general and the governor are taking the same position. If the state itself completely refuses to defend the bill, there are rare cases where the attorney general and a governor don't agree. And assuming the governor has signed the bill, then you'd have a situation where the governor would have to retain some other lawyers to handle it. They might have to hire a private lawyer, and that would cost taxpayers, obviously, more money than if it's just the state doing it. But even if it's just the state doing it, even if the attorney general does agree to defend it, it's still going to basically cost money because that's time and resources from the state.
Does it cost a lot of money?
Depends, yeah. Any case that goes all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court would definitely cost a lot of money, particularly on this issue. I mean, I think, yeah, we're talking at least a couple $100,000, if not more. Now, there will be no shortage of lawyers who would be willing to help. There are already pro-life groups. There's a group called the Thomas More Group. There's a group called the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. And there's individuals as well who have already offered to help the state pay for this.
We're hearing from Mark Hendy, who is director of the Constitutional Law Center at Drake University. At the very beginning of this discussion, you had mentioned there was a second scenario. Could you explain what the second scenario was?
If the opponents of the law brought their lawsuit under the state constitution, which also, you know, has some provisions, and there are court decisions like the Varnum decision involving same-sex marriage that defend privacy rights of individuals, then you have a scenario where the farthest it could go would be the Iowa Supreme Court. It could not get to the U.S. Supreme Court under the state constitution.
Does Iowa state law protect the right to abortion?
The federal constitutional law is the baseline. You can't take away any rights from these women as long as that Roe versus Wade decision is in place. So if the challengers are the pro-choice people, they could challenge the law under the state constitution and say, not only does Roe versus Wade support us, but we think the state constitution is even stronger in terms of protecting the rights of women. And that's why you might have an argument about state constitutional law. But the problem is, at the end of the day, there's always Roe versus Wade hovering over this. You really wouldn't be able to remove this right unless Roe versus Wade got overturned. And that's why I spent most of my time talking about how the key issue would be if the pro-life forces are able to get this case up to the Supreme Court and challenge Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Mark, knowing constitutional law, what do you see coming?
Well, I suspect if the bill is signed, there will be like a very quick action by groups like Planned Parenthood, maybe the ACLU, et cetera. And they would go into a trial court at either the state level or the federal level and ask immediately that the law be enjoined. Enjoined just means put so that it's not in effect at all. And I suspect that a trial court would immediately grant that request because of Roe versus Wade.
And that doesn't require an individual. The organizations can do that on their own without saying...
No, it does require a client. Usually, you know, there would be some woman, presumably, who is pregnant and thinking of having an abortion is past 6 weeks. Basically, if a client was willing to challenge this, the client and the group would work together. But no, there still would have to be a client behind this.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
It's an interesting attempt, I think, by some Iowa lawmakers to kind of lead the way in this area nationally. Iowa's lawmakers are not the first people to do that. You know, other states have pro-life lawmakers who have also tried to do that. And the Supreme Court, though, has generally disappointed the pro-life forces, particularly back in 1992. Pro-life side really thought they had that in the bag. But that was disappointment for the pro-life forces in the sense that the court upheld Roe versus Wade. However, the court did grant them a partial victory on some smaller issues. And so, you know, that may be another goal that they have. Maybe they don't succeed in overturning Roe versus Wade, but they are able to sort of chip away at it. And that's another possibility.
And do you think that it is a local ambition, or do you think this is part of a national strategy that Iowa has just turned out to be the best place to start?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. Certainly, you know, I was one of only a couple states that have a potential fetal heartbeat law. It becomes one of the most restrictive anti-abortion laws in the country. So if Iowa's legislative folks who are pro-life get this through, and it, obviously they got it through the legislature and the governor signs it, then it becomes a national issue, although I suspect all along they have been working with national groups. But once you get a state that sort of sticks its neck out, like Iowa is in this case, then you get that interest from different groups nationally. So I think it's really a combination, but certainly the driving force has to be the people in the legislature who are pro-life. They're the ones that got it passed.
Thank you so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And if you've just joined us, that was Mark Kende, director of Drake University's Constitutional Law Center, explaining the legal struggles that we can expect if Governor Reynolds signs the fetal heartbeat abortion bill into law. Reynolds has made it clear that she's leaning towards signing the bill and will act quickly, and some people expect her to sign it today. Kende pointed out that groups are preparing to fight for both sides of the issue. He named the Thomas More Society as one of the groups preparing to defend the law if it's challenged. Martin Cannon, the Thomas More Society special counsel, has joined us by phone. Mr. Cannon is a trial lawyer with an extensive history of cases challenging abortion in numerous ways, and he's helped Iowa legislators draft and defend anti-abortion legislation. Mr. Cannon, thank you for joining us. Are you there?
Yes, thank you for having me.
So where exactly are you?
I am actually in Crescent, Iowa.
Okay. Your description on that Thomas More website says that your primary purpose has been to keep the pro-life counselors out on the sidewalks around abortion clinics where they continue their tremendous impact. For starters, can you elaborate? Is that referring to work you've done defending protesters outside Planned Parenthood?
Yes, it is. I hesitate to call them protesters, but they are people who really have kept this issue alive for the 40 years since Roe. They're the people who won't sit down and shut up like a lot of normal folks would have them do. And I think they've been sort of the heart and soul of the pro-life movement. And of course, they're affecting women's choices at the very last possible moment before they go in and make them. So they've been targeted by prosecutors and by the abortion industry for years, trying to get them off the sidewalk, and of course, we very vigorously defend them, and rather successfully. It's a great, lovely, fun thing to do because they're the most wonderful people on the planet.
What they're doing out there is they're trying to dissuade people that are going in to have abortions or to change their mind. Is that what they're doing out there?
Yes, and they do it in various ways. Some of them just hold signs. Some of them just stand there and pray. Some preach. Some hand out pamphlets and try to walk with the woman and talk to her. Those are the ones we call the sidewalk counselors. And the courts are starting to recognize that that's a special thing, an important thing, the close personal contact, and that it's not just standing there hollering and that's why it needs defense. You know, when they try to create these bubble zones and floating buffers and stuff, they are impinging on that close personal space that is very necessary and constitutionally protected. So,
and are these people generally grassroots activists, or is this?
Yeah, they're generally local. They're from the church down the street. They kind of come from the community itself, which is important because they're trying to protect their neighbors from being killed, and they're just so persistent and so peaceful and prayerful. And I don't think we'd be where we are today in the pro-life movement if not for the sidewalk counselors.
Your work has been to defend them in court in
yes.
terms of not having to move to the other side of the street.
Not only prevent things like that, but defend them from criminal charges that are just typically bogus. And even if there's a ring of truth to them, like a trespass charge, say a woman walks onto the parking lot of the abortion clinic to hand a person a pamphlet who seems to be receptive, the neighborhood kid walking home from school who crosses that parking lot is not going to be charged with trespass. If he is, some judge might fine him $10 and send him home. The same offense by a pro-lifer is going to get prosecuted as heavily as possible, and some judge might give them 6 months or a year in jail, even though their sneakers didn't do any more damage to the asphalt than the kid walking home from school.
Most people are not real familiar with Thomas More Society. As I understand it, it is based in Chicago.
Yeah, we have offices mm-hmm. in Chicago, Omaha, and Iowa.
Can you describe it a little bit so that those listening can understand who you are or who the organization is?
Sure. The Thomas More Society is a public interest law firm that is dedicated to defending life and religious liberty, among other things. But those are the two primary points of focus. It started 20, 25 years ago when our founder, Tom Brekka, took Joe Scheidler's case on. That was Now versus Scheidler, the National Organization for Women versus Scheidler. He was defending Mr. Scheidler, who was a sidewalk advocate, from charges brought to behest of the National Organization for Women under a federal law that made it illegal to racketeer and be corrupt. And Mr. Brekka had that case in the Supreme Court three different times over 20 years. And if he hadn't won that case, things would be very different on every sidewalk around every clinic in the country today.
So you're a law firm. You're a not-for-profit organization?
Yeah, it's a mm-hmm. non-profit organization with we have a number of in-house lawyers, and then we contract with other like-minded lawyers around the country to get cases defended. And we've done it all over the country in courts at every level, from small trial courts in small towns up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
What role do you see in this fetal heartbeat law?
Well, it's actually it may be pivotal. Early on in the drafting and consideration of the Iowa heartbeat bill, some Iowa legislators and some federal legislators reached out to the Thomas More Society and said, "Hey, people are concerned that when this thing gets challenged, it's going to cost the state of Iowa a lot of money to defend it. Can you help out here?" So we, in writing on our letterhead, we made a commitment to the state of Iowa, to the legislators of Iowa, that if this thing got passed and it got challenged, the Thomas More Society would defend the bill on behalf of the state of Iowa at no charge to the state.
So, in other words, as Mr. Kendi was saying earlier, if in case the Attorney General decides not to prosecute the case, the Thomas More Society would?
Yes, or if he decides to have us assist him or just retain us to do it, we will do it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, if possible, at no charge to the state.
And it's been suggested by many that the new bill is part of a strategy to really get to the Supreme Court. It was interesting you mentioned that federal legislators have also been involved with what's happening to Iowa. Do you see this as a strategy to challenge Roe versus Wade in the Supreme Court?
I don't put it that way. Certainly, it's teeing up a challenge. But the primary purpose of the bill is to protect Iowa's children. And the reason we're willing to pass the bill, despite the likely challenge, is that the people of the state of Iowa feel a compelling right to protect their own children. And we don't feel that the wrongful ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court in Roe and its progeny should deprive us of that right.
So you're saying your priority is really the principle here in Iowa?
Yes, protect our children. If the feds are going to say we can't do that, there's something wrong. And that's why Roe needs to be reversed.
And the Supreme Court in recent years has not taken this up. Why do you think it would be possible to challenge it now?
Well, I think that the climate is changing, and we're in the right place and the right time. The reason I say the right place is because we're in the Eighth Circuit. On the federal level, the Court of Appeals are broken down into a dozen or so circuits. We're in the Eighth Circuit. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals very reluctantly, turned away a couple of similar bills in the last several years because they collide with, I shouldn't say they turned them away, they ruled on the case and threw out the statutes because they run headlong into Roe and its progeny. But interestingly, the court explained basically why Roe is bad law and needs to be reversed. It's not rocket science here. When even a court that's respecting Roe is saying this is unpleasant, we don't want to do this, you need to listen. And I think the U.S. Supreme Court eventually is going to listen. States are passing these things more and more and getting bolstered just by the presence of one another in doing so. You know, we passed this thing in Iowa the other day. South Carolina has passed a bill. Nebraska is now, leaders in Nebraska are saying, well, if Iowa has the nerve to do it, maybe we'll do it too. And Nebraska has also been a leader. Nebraska passed, the first 20-week fetal pain bill. Now Iowa's got heartbeat. South Carolina's got something even more significant. This is the movement, and the Supreme Court is changing also. We have President Trump, who appointed Justice Gorsuch. He's appointed other judges to the federal bench at lower levels. By the time this thing gets there, another Supreme Court justice may have retired and been replaced. This is the time to do it. Roe was not like other decisions that were mistakes. Roe is bad law. Roe was lawlessness. Roe should be invalidated just because of its defects, even before getting to legal arguments. And I can elaborate on that if you want.
Well, we have limited time, so I think what I want to do is something that's maybe closer to what people want to hear from you, which is, why is this important to you? You know, what are the thoughts and the feelings behind driving this movement?
Well, the humanity of the unborn child has simply, it's become more and more evident with ultrasounds and the various imaging capacities that we have. And the average person simply doesn't accept the idea that a child is less of a person, less of an individual with rights because he resides in another person's body.
Many say that the current law is out of step with realities of human experience, and Iowans have really always prided ourselves in being a humanitarian state. Yes. And so people point out that with people like rape victims or incest victims, they're often not able to respond in time to trauma based on their emotional state, and that it's creating a dangerous situation for women in general. So how do you respond to this and put it in your humanitarian context?
Well, that question or the predicate for it sort of reflects the fact that people have simply become accustomed to abortion, whether it's the university that says if you pass this bill we won't be able to do our research, or the person who says what about rape and incest and so forth. It's they spring from the idea that the child is a second class thing, it's not even a human, and therefore the unfortunate circumstances justify killing it. But we don't kill a child because of the acts of its father. And if my own view is that when you allow a person to kill a child because of because of, say, rape, we actually minimize the rape and make rapes more likely.
Because, can you follow that thought through? I'm trying to follow through your logic.
Because when a child can simply be expunged, the consequence of the rape is reduced in the minds of many. It's reduced in the minds of prosecutors. It's reduced in the minds of judges who sentence rapists. It's reduced in the minds of rapists. It's even reduced in the minds of women. Rape is a horrendous crime with great consequence to the woman. And when we allow for abortion in the cases of rape, I think it minimizes the crime, even though it can't minimize the many wrongful, injurious things it does to the woman.
So you do have concerns for the women who are involved in all this?
Absolutely. And, of course, there are a lot of women out there who have had their children conceived in rape, and they're very, very glad they did it. And yet so many women who do have abortions, whether it's in rape consequences or otherwise, never quite get over it. You know, a woman is not wired to kill her children. And we've foisted that upon women, this idea. And it's a mistake, and it's tragically, basically abusive to women.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon, for sharing your thoughts. Mr. Cannon is the Thomas More Society Special Counsel. And the Thomas More Society is one of a number of national organizations who've come forward to support the fetal heartbeat bill as a lawsuit challenging it is almost certain. Any last words?
Just thank you for having me, and call me anytime.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Planned Parenthood and American Civil Liberties Union are two organizations generally expected to be challenging the law. Veronica Fowler is Communications Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, and she was able to come by KHOI yesterday evening, so I asked her whether they expect the bill to pass into the law soon.
Do you think that Governor Reynolds will sign this bill?
The speculation from others is that she will. Anyone who follows Iowa politics knows that Governor Reynolds is very pro-choice, anti-abortion, and so we're certainly prepared for her to sign that. We are cautious in what we talk about, but definitely we can assure our supporters and people who support a woman's right to choose that we are standing by Iowa women. We believe it's unconstitutional, and we're prepared. Definitely we're prepared.
Talk about the role of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa.
We've obviously been filing lawsuits to hold back the line regarding abortion. Back in 2015, there was a Board of Medicine rule that would have effectively banned Planned Parenthood physicians from using telemedicine to dispense abortion pills, and that was really critical for women in rural areas. They would have a teleconference with a doctor, and then basically a machine would dispense a pill. There would be testing just the way there was, and in other situations, blood tests or whatever the doctor felt was needed, but he just wasn't physically on site. We were successful with the Iowa Supreme Court in that. And then about a year ago, Governor Branstad signed into law, an abortion law that basically makes the cutoff point for abortions 20 weeks. There are also two other key provisions on that law that we are currently contesting. Basically, the first part of that is that a woman needs a second medically unnecessary appointment, basically just to be handed some materials and talked to in order to get an abortion. And at least 72 hours after that appointment, and you can't even make the appointment at that time, you have to have this waiting period. Basically, you have to wait at least 3 days after you already have that second appointment. That's prohibitive. Even if you live next door to a clinic, that can prolong it by a week or more, just by the time you get it scheduled and by the time everything is played out in sequence. And then, of course, if you're somebody who has to drive 2, 3, 4 hours, that's doubly prohibitive and triply prohibitive. If you're low income, you don't have reliable transport, you have to provide childcare, you can't take time off work easily. So as with so many of these laws, it's really punishing the most vulnerable women with the fewest resources. Yeah, we saw that coming, and we were prepared to file a lawsuit and an injunction the moment that Branstad signed it. We have been successful so far in preventing those two pieces of the law going into effect.
Is the Civil Liberties Union organizing on a national level to anticipate the day when it could possibly come before the Supreme Court?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Iowa is not alone in some of these fights at all. The wonderful thing about the ACLU and Planned Parenthood as well is that we have these presences in states around the country, but then we also have a national organization. And so everything we do both, of course, you know, to benefit our state, but also looking at the national landscape. And so it's very strategic.
As this bill is as well.
Yes, as well. I mean, one reason we're that way is because a lot of the bad bills that we're fighting are also bills that special interest groups are pushing to get into state legislatures and get passed.
So that kind of puts Iowa Civil Liberties Union in a little bit of a special role right now, since Iowa's the battlefield for this, right?
Yes. And backed up with national and working with partners like Planned Parenthood of the Heartland and working with the fabulous attorneys also at Planned Parenthood National. There is really a whole team of very skilled people who are on this and a number of other partner organizations. There is going to be a rally at 11 organized by Planned Parenthood, and our executive director, Mert Stringer, will also be there and speaking.
Where will the rally be?
It will be at the state capitol.
Uh-huh. Now, it's not against the law to go to another state to get an abortion, is it?
No. Okay. No. But if you look at the other states, right now, their abortion laws aren't terrific either.
I mean, and surrounding us.
Right. In Illinois, if you're a minor, the parents have to be notified. In Missouri, the state bans most abortions after a fetus has been considered viable. Nebraska bans most abortions after 20 weeks. South Dakota bans most abortions after 20 weeks. Wisconsin bans most abortion after 20 weeks. So if you are in a situation where perhaps you have been in denial or you had trouble getting together money for an abortion and transportation and everything else, and the clock was ticking, the time frame for women to make these decisions is appallingly small. I mean, we're looking at going back almost a half century to a very dark era when women were trying to get either, you know, abortions by people who weren't professionals in unsanitary conditions, or worse yet, trying to perform the abortions themselves. If you look at the wording of the bill, all the memes of A Handmaid's Tale feel awfully, awfully real. If you, for example, want to say that, okay, you know, a person was sexually assaulted and they are pregnant as a result, you have to report that rape to a law enforcement agency, a public or a private health agency, or a family physician within 45 days. So if you're a teenage girl who's been raped,
teenager not, able, is hesitant.
Right. Even to a close family member. And a lot of times what happens, of course, is that they might keep it to themselves until they realize that, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. I'm going to need somebody's help with this. So then they might go to a relative or a doctor. And because the way the law is written, at 6 weeks, they might not even know that, especially if you've been sexually assaulted. You might be in denial and not know until later in the pregnancy. And especially if you're very young, you might not be in touch with your body and know that just because you skipped a period or you have morning sickness that you're even pregnant. So it's heartless. The same applies to victims of incest. You have to report that incest to a law enforcement agency or a public or private health agency or a family physician within 140 days. That's a really hard thing for an incest victim to do. With the 6 week, you know, cutoff. And then, of course, there's the exemption that if the physician certifies that the fetus has an abnormality that is, in the physician's reasonable medical judgment, incompatible with life. That's a really hard call for a lot of doctors and a lot of parents to make. Of course, there were some legislators who thought that the law was too soft on abortion and allowed too many women to get abortions. It's very concerning. And it's not even the lives of the women that are damaged. It is the lives of everyone around them, husbands, boyfriends, other children that they have or choose to have as well. Because when, you know, women are forced to have children against their will, it makes them drop out of school. It traps them in jobs that pay less well, or it traps them into paying for child care.
Usually the response is they can be adopted.
But that is also an extremely hard thing for people to do. It's not easy to be a 16-year-old and complete your education if you're carrying that pregnancy. In some cases, for example, you are at higher risk for domestic violence because you became pregnant, either by a father or a husband or a boyfriend. Are we going to ask 12-year-old girls to have babies? In fact, we are. That's exactly what we're demanding. People seem to think that the 12-year-olds are an exemption, but you know, I've been a middle school mom, and it seems about every other year at the middle school there is indeed a girl who's pregnant, and we don't even see the ones who either miscarried or chose to abort. So it's heartless.
Okay, thank you. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was Veronica Fowler from the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa speaking about the pending fetal heartbeat abortion law of Iowa, which many expect Governor Reynolds to sign on the forefront of challenging Roe versus Wade Supreme Court decision affirming the legality of a woman's right to have an abortion under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. Clearly, there is much more to come on this. But let's turn for a while to lighter thoughts. Susan Guiasta is here, public relations officer for the City of Ames.
It's great to be here.
Okay, let's talk about the City of Ames and what's happening in our town.
Well, it's a new month again. Hard to believe. It finally looks like spring is here. It's great to see everything green and blooming. Some things that are happening in May. It's an exciting month again. I just returned last night. I was at the Ames Public Library at
the first
informational meeting on the Healthy Life Center.
And I see in front of you have a beautiful brochure.
I can leave this
it's
with
gorgeous.
You.
Gorgeous.
So we have a new brochure explaining the Healthy Life Center for those who don't know what it is, and it is kind of a new concept. There are six entities in the area that are partnering to invest in a proposed facility that would include an indoor aquatic center, public meeting space, therapeutic indoor pool, a child watch center for drop-in kind of daycare, adult daycare. I'll explain some of the partners and some of these services will be more clear. So the City of Ames, DMAC, Heartland Senior Services, Iowa State University, Mary Greeley, and Story County. So Mary Greeley was interested in a facility to do rehab, including warm water rehab. Heartland Senior Services was interested in relocating and having services available to our senior residents, particularly their adult daycare at the center. DMAC was interested in some way that students could bring those culinary skills to life through kitchen participation, kitchen experiences. Story County and the City of Ames just wanted a facility where residents could go and become active. So those six entities together have developed this proposal.
So this is for young and old alike.
It is intergenerational. From the youngest child to the oldest resident would come to this one facility, a one-stop shop, where they would have the opportunity to engage in a holistic health experience. So imagine that you were going to meet friends at the Healthy Life Center and maybe grab a smoothie. You could walk on the indoor track. You could walk a current channel in the aquatic center. You could take a yoga class. You could take an art class. You could take a cooking class. You could drop your kids off while you were participating in these, and they would experience physical activity and sensory kinds of experiences where they would have a great time. There would be community gardens outside. There would be a play structure outside. The whole concept is holistic, and whatever that means to you, we're still in the conceptual phase, so it's still there's still an opportunity to add your two cents. And like I said, I was at the first informational meeting last night, but there are several more coming. Monday, May 7th, 7 p.m. at Kate Mitchell School. Wednesday, May 9th, 7 p.m. at Ames High. And Tuesday, May 15th at 7 p.m. at Ames Middle School.
Okay.
So those are your opportunities to get out and learn more. If those times don't work for you, you can always go to the City of Ames website. There's a link on the front page to the Healthy Life Center, or you can go to cityofames.org/healthylifecenter to go directly to the pages that provide information. So the reason that this is so important that people become educated in it is because at some point we will be asking residents to vote.
A referendum to a bond issue, essentially,
to help fund this. This is almost a $50 million center. Those six entities that were discussed earlier bring to the table resources and funding, but not all the funding. Mm-hmm. And so there is a private fundraising campaign going on right now, but also there would be some public buy-in around $17 million. Mm-hmm. So a $17 million investment by the public for a nearly $50 million facility is a pretty good buy for your dollar. However, the city doesn't advocate or suggest anybody vote anyway. We simply provide education on what the project is and what you get for your money. Okay. So very exciting. As you know, with the new high school bond referendum, the high school will be taken down and a new high school will be built. Also, the pool will be taken down. The Ames Municipal Pool is pretty much at the end of its life. It's over 50 years old, and it's really beyond the point of salvaging. So that pool will disappear from the mix of pools in the City of Ames, and that really does limit your aquatic opportunity if you're somebody who really enjoys swimming. In Iowa, during the winter months, going to an indoor aquatic center is really kind of a treat that we've not experienced in this community. And we know that when we hear from residents who come from other communities, that's something they very much miss. We're looking forward to seeing how that project plays out.
Anything else for the month of May?
Yeah, we're excited to bring back. It's been a while, but Mayor John Hala and the Ames City Council are hosting the return of the Mayor's Annual Bike Ride on May 12th. We will gather at 9 a.m. Saturday, May 12th for a bike ride from City Hall north to Ada Hayes Heritage Park. And we're hoping for great weather and terrific turnout. It's a family-friendly ride. No registration required. Just show up. And we will kind of take a leisurely pace. We will have a route that will all kind of sort of shepherd it through Brookside Park, over to Furman Aquatic Center, and all the way north to Ada Hayden. Once we're at Ada Hayden, there'll be some City of Ames vehicles on display. The bookmobile will be there and some activities. And then we'll wind our way back to to City Hall. So
okay. Again, what day is that?
That is Saturday, May 12th.
Okay, and what time?
9 a.m.
9 a.m. And
one final
else?
Biking thing.
Okay.
It is Bike to Work Week, starts on May 14th, and City Hall has been the kickoff point for that breakfast. So that week, there are breakfasts around the community. 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Monday, May 14th, will be the City Hall kickoff of the Bike to Work Week with our City Hall breakfast.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Lots of health and energy in Ames, Iowa.
Absolutely.
Susan is the Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. And you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this past hour. Dennis Hart will take us out today with a roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and related local papers. If you found KHOI informative, and if KHOI helps you in any way digest and reflect on being a citizen of Iowa and the world, please give KHOI a vote of confidence as we ask you to become a member donor by going to khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, and click on the yellow donate button. And remember, you the listener are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And now here's Dennis Hart with a roundup of local news.
As always, we start with Tuesday's Ames Tribune, which reported that Spence Evans will stay as principal at Ames High School, at least for now. Evans was one of two finalists for the superintendent position at the Washington Community School District in southeast Iowa, but he was not chosen for the job. Washington School Board President Eric Turner said that Evans' experience made him an attractive candidate and that his district had received lots of positive input about Evans. An Ames School District spokesman said as far as the district was aware, Evans was not pursuing other options. Several other Ames District administrators are leaving at the end of this school year, including Superintendent Tim Taylor, Associate Superintendent Mandy Ross, and Edwards Elementary School Principal David Peterson. Tuesday's Tribune also reported that an Ames man, 38-year-old William Thomas Flynn, was charged with assault on a peace officer, first-degree harassment, and public intoxication. As Flynn was being taken to the Story County Jail, he allegedly told an officer several times that he was going to rip his throat and kill him. Fundraising to bring a new wellness center to Zeering raised more than $25,000 earlier this month, thanks to a cookout and auction.
So far, organizers have raised about $100,000. The proposed facility would hold the Nesco Family Medical Clinic, along with Zering's EMS services, physical therapy, and fitness activities. Right now, the plan is to start construction in September. Also Tuesday in the Trib, a feature story about a men's barbershop in Ames that's embarked on a major expansion project. The Groom Room, which is in the Main Street station at 526 Main Street, is building a new cutting area in an unused space next to its current storefront. The remodeling is expected to be finished by the end of June. Tuesday's Tribune also had word that Ryman Gardens will have plenty going on during its so-called Spring Fling, which will take place during Mother's Day weekend. National Public Gardens Day will start things off on Friday, May 11th. A plant sale extravaganza will take place that Friday and Saturday, and then Ryman will honor all moms on Mother's Day, May 13th, with free admission. Fire and water made big news in Wednesday's Tribune. First, about fire. Two firefighters were hospitalized while battling a windswept blaze at Black's Heritage Farm just south of Ames on Monday evening. Kelly Assistant Fire Chief Randy Graham said the blaze lasted more than 12 hours. At the time, Story County was under a high wind warning. Two firefighters, one of them Kelly Fire Chief Kenny Kling, were hospitalized for what was suspected to be heat exhaustion. Another story in Wednesday's Tribune reported that several Story County communities have seen an uptick in fires in recent days. In Nevada, the fire department responded to 11 fires over the course of 7 days. Half of them were the result of controlled burns getting out of hand, mostly because of recent high winds and dry weather. Nevada Fire Chief Ray Reynolds said one of the issues is that people think their controlled burn is going to be small, and they either walk away too soon or think they have it out when the wind starts to kick up embers and carry them. Reynolds said if anyone wants to burn waste, it's important to visit different weather websites to monitor and predict changes, to be actively involved in the burn process, and to monitor the fire throughout its duration. The Tribune reported that the city of Cambridge has also seen an increase in fires in recent days, but Ames has not experienced any significant problems with fires because of the weather. On the crime beat, Wednesday's Trib reported that the Nevada man who allegedly assaulted a woman and arresting officers at his home last November has been sentenced to 11 years in prison. 26-year-old Scott Andrew Kaufman had pleaded guilty to willful injury and assault on a police officer. Court documents said Kaufman had gotten into an argument with the victim and started punching her in the stomach and face. When police arrived, he began fighting with officers. Still on the crime beat, Wednesday Trib reported that the trial date has been set for the Ames man, indicted by a federal grand jury on two charges of mailing an envelope filled with a white powder thought to be anthrax to a Nevada teacher. 66-year-old Mondell V. Olson will go on trial July 2nd at the U.S. District Courthouse in Des Moines. Olson had previously been arrested and charged with harassing a transgender student at Nevada High last year. He was sentenced to 30 days in jail back then, fined $625, and placed on 1 year's probation. Both of Olson's current federal charges carry a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison. On the food beat, Wednesday's Tribune reported that Iowa's top beef advocacy group has chosen Cafe Baudelaire in Ames as having the best burgers in the state. The Iowa Cattlemen's Association said the taste and quality of the burger are, in its words, outstanding and worth a drive to have it again. Still on the food beat, the Trib reported that a dozen Ames high school students took part in a lettuce eating contest on Tuesday afternoon. That's right, lettuce eating. The school's Lettuce Club put on the event, which welcomed students to arrive with a head of iceberg lettuce weighing at least 1 pound. Dozens of other Ames High students and even a few teachers crowded into a classroom to watch the 12 contestants try to devour their lettuce. The winner, junior Dylan Tate, who finished his lettuce in 3 minutes, 40 seconds. In Thursday's Tribune, word that a raging house fire in rural Jewell left one person dead. The blaze broke out at 3685 Poplar Grove Avenue. The property owner ran a salvage business, so the home was surrounded by old cars, a liquid propane tank, inflated tires, and other material that caused explosions. Winds up to 25 miles an hour quickly spread the flames to a garage and an abandoned farmhouse that also were on the property. A body was found inside the home. Cause of the blaze remained unknown. Also in Thursday's Trib, a report that a settlement was reached in a discrimination case involving Story County and County Treasurer Renee Tweet. The complaint alleged that Tweet discriminated against Kenyon, who is a former employee in the treasurer's office, because of Kenyon's age. She is 59. The complaint alleges that Kenyon's age was a motivating factor for Tweet, who decided not to promote Kenyon and later let her go from county employment. Tweet denied that any discrimination took place. Details of the settlement were not immediately available. Tweet was first elected to office in 2010, and she is running for a third term. Thursday's Trib also reported that Iowa State University police officers were taking training courses this week in how to use naloxone, a drug to counteract opioid overdoses. YSS, an Ames-based social service organization, is providing training and enough naloxone to have a dose in every ISU squad car. University Police Chief Michael Newton said his department wants to be ready in case a student or anyone on campus exhibits symptoms of an overdose or to save an officer who is accidentally exposed to drugs while handling evidence or conducting a search. Thursday's Trib reported that a Roland woman was arrested after allegedly driving a vehicle used in a February robbery in Ames. 18-year-old Michaela Faith Weston was charged with second-degree robbery and a controlled substance violation. There was more in Thursday's Trib, including word that several Ames school staff members were honored on Wednesday for devoting a quarter century of their careers to the district. They were the featured guests at a social event held at the district office. There was also word about public information meetings concerning the proposed Healthy Life Center. Another one is set for 7 p.m. this coming Monday night at Mitchell Elementary School, followed by a meeting next Wednesday at 7 at Ames High. The fourth informational meeting is set for Tuesday, May 15th at 7 p.m. at Ames Middle School. The Trib also reported that the Entertainment Acts have been announced for this summer's stop in Ames for the Register's annual Great Bike Ride across Iowa. One of the headliner acts will be the Spasmatics, a 1980s cover band. Most of Main Street in Ames and other downtown streets will be closed on July 24th when the bike ride reaches Ames for an overnight stop. The Trib also had word that the Ames Farmers Market will begin its 2018 season tomorrow, Saturday, on Main Street. The market could have up to 77 vendors each week, up from the average of 55 in years past. The market will run from 8 a.m. to 12:30 on Main Street. And one more note from Thursday's Trib, the updated version of SciRide, the Ames Transit System, will hit the streets tomorrow, Saturday. There will be some new routes and lower fares. In this week's Nevada Journal, a report on the hailstorm that pounded Nevada on Tuesday afternoon. It was so strong it caused between $45,000 and $75,000 damage to camper vehicles parked outside Easy Camping RV along South G Avenue in Nevada. The Journal also reported that Nevada City Administrator Matt Martison admitted that he was shocked when he opened bids last week on the project between the city and the Nevada School District to build a baseball field at the Score Park. The low bid came in at $1.4 million, which is more than it was expected to be. Nevada City Council members decided to pay for its part of the project through local option sales tax revenue. The city's portion of the project totals nearly $450,000. The school district's portion of the project totals about $950,000. The school board approved its part of the construction costs on Monday. And the Journal has a story about what happened at Central Elementary School when Opera Iowa performed for students. Opera Iowa is part of the Des Moines Metro Opera. For younger students, this was a new and exciting experience. In this week's Boone News Republican, word that a new principal has been chosen for Franklin Elementary School in Boone. He is Brad Winter, who is now a principal in Wyoming. Winter will start his new job in July. He has been principal at Hillcrest Elementary in Gillette, Wyoming for 12 years. He also has elementary school teaching experience. Also in the News Republican, a report that a major new retail outlet will soon open in the old Walmart building off Story Street next to Highway 30. Baumgars has bought the building and plans to put a store in this fall. Baumgars has 84 stores throughout Iowa, Colorado, Idaho, Nebraska, Minnesota, South Dakota, and Wyoming. It is a farm, home, and ranch retailer. The News Republican also had details about the upcoming Puffer Billy Days Festival, which will return for its 42nd year. This year's festival will take place September 7th through the 9th. There will be live music, a car show and quilt show, a parade and motorcycle show, a spelling bee contest, and a pet show contest, and much more. In this week's Story City Herald, word that Boy Scout Troop 101 held a food drive to benefit the Loaves and Fishes food pantry. More than 2,000 food items were donated. Also in the Herald, the United Way of Story County recently showed its appreciation to the Central Iowa Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, known as RSVP. The United Way hosted a soup luncheon for the volunteers. 21 volunteers gave 605 hours of their time to the United Way last year. And there you have it, this week's summary of news events from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers. I'm KHOI Civic Reporter Dennis Hart, wishing you, as always, a happy, safe, and healthy weekend.
You can wash my jumper, starch my overalls, catch a train they call the Cannonball from Buffalo to Washington. Thank you. yonder comes a train and it's a coming down the track. Gonna carry me away and ain't ever coming back, my honey babe, my blue-eyed girl. Cannonball, take me away. Cannonball, take me away, far from this place. Lord, my baby left me, she even took my shoes. It's enough to give me those doggone weary blues. Lord, she's gone, solid gone. I'm gonna go up north, I'm going up north this fall. And if luck don't change, I won't be back at all. My honey babe, I'm leaving you. Cannonball, take me away. Cannonball, take me away, far from this place. Yonder comes a train, it's a coming down the track. Gonna carry me away and I ain't ever coming back. My honey babe, my blue-eyed girl. Honey babe, my blue-eyed girl.